When we face chronic stress and things happening all the time, what happens is our cortisol level doesn't go back down. And the problem with that is that cortisol actually affects our ability to think rationally. It affects the PFC part of our brain, that brain CEO. And so we don't necessarily have the same reasoning skills or the same response skills that we would have under other circumstances. And in those situations, what you're going to get then is a lot more reaction and a lot less rational response. And so if we are in a workplace where there's a significant amount of consistent ongoing stress, you're going to see more flare-ups from people, more fight or flight responses from people than you would in an environment where there's a lot of psychological safety and a lower level of stress, which means our skill set and our ability to handle that for ourselves and for other people becomes really important. Hello, everyone. I am Jess Chapman, and this is an episode of our Wired to Work podcast, all about how we help make work better for everyone today. And in this episode, I want to talk specifically about reactions and the notion of fight or flight. Now, you've probably heard that term before. It was first coined or used by Walter Cannon back in 1915. So it's been around for a while. And since then, it's entered our vocabulary when we tend to talk about people having significant reactions to life events. And so you might be thinking, well, okay, Jess, if it's been around that long, we all know about it. Why are you wanting to talk about it in a podcast episode for Wired to Work today? Well, I'm bringing it up because stress is a more prevalent conversation than ever. You look at some of the statistics, for example, Gallup has a statistic in their 2023 State of the Workplace report where they ask people about daily stress levels, and 44% of employees said that they felt stressed a lot the previous day, which means at some point, if you haven't already, you are either going to be on the receiving end of somebody's emotional reaction to something, or you're going to find yourself having an emotional reaction to something. And so the more that we have skills to be able to manage those reactions, both for ourselves and for others, the better we're likely going to be at handling things happening at work. So I want to talk generically today about what's happening when we have this kind of response. And I will say again, this is not going to be a clinically accurate description of what happens in your brain, but more for us to be able to conceptually grasp what's happening and know what to do about it. Essentially, your brain is designed to keep you alive, constantly scanning the world around you and looking for threat and for reward. So threat is essentially what it sounds like, things that you think are going to be bad for you, and reward is what it sounds like, things that you think are going to be good for you. And so we're always constantly looking for that all of the time. We get sensory information that comes in through our eyes, ears, skin, sense of smell, taste, all of those things that gets processed by our thalamus. And that information goes to two places. It goes to our amygdala, which is like your brain sentry or soldier, and it goes to your prefrontal cortex or your PFC, which is kind of like your brain CEO. But it goes to your sentry faster than it goes to your CEO. And what happens in the amygdala, which is your sentry part of the brain, is the amygdala doesn't really think, not in the way that we think about it. What your amygdala does is recognize patterns. It's a pattern recognition machine. And so your amygdala is comparing the information it's receiving to previous patterns and memories and identifying whether something is going to be a threat or not. And then if your amygdala spots a pattern or a threat, then it triggers a process to get you ready to handle with that threat. So it triggers the release of adrenaline, it'll make your heart go faster, which is why your heart starts racing. It'll direct blood flow and all those kinds of things to get you ready to manage the threat that's coming. And that's where the idea of fight or flight comes from, right? We're getting ready to either fight back or to run away. And that's why you'll feel things like your heart racing. It's why your mouth goes dry, because production of saliva will not keep you alive. Meanwhile, your prefrontal cortex is still processing, which is why eventually you will often say things like, I wish I hadn't reacted like that, because your PFC will help you respond, your amygdala will help you react, and your reactions are always faster than what your PFC will do in terms of response. Eventually, your PFC will cut in. It will probably process a lot more information than just what your amygdala is receiving and start to allow you to make decisions and plan and those kinds of things, which will help neutralize your response. But your amygdala is way faster. And so your reaction will happen faster than your response. And so then we end up with kind of those four areas that we're talking about. And you're thinking four, when did four come in? So actually we talk about flight or fight, but nowadays we actually talk about fight, flight, freeze and flock. I'm going to be careful how I say all of those on the podcast today. So fight is what it sounds like, right? Someone will be aggressive, defensive, maybe blaming, pointing fingers, shouting, all of those types of things. And flight is that running away, avoiding, procrastination behavior. But the other two came in the early 2000s and we talk about those as well. So freeze is also a possible reaction to threat. And some of you have probably experienced this when you literally lose your train of thought, get stuck in analysis paralysis, kind of shut down and don't know how to respond to something. That would be the freeze part of the sentence. And then flock is interesting because it's a little bit different. So fight or flight and freeze are all responses to avoid the threat. All right, so they're kind of avoidance tactics or removal tactics. Flocking is actually about trying to run towards safety. And if you've ever been in a situation where somebody's been unhappy and what they've done is go and rile up all the other people in the team or all the other people that they have friends with in the organization, and they've kind of banded together to tell you that they're all collectively unhappy, well, that's an example of flocking, right? We are running to safety. There's safety in numbers. There's safety in other people experiencing the same thing. We feel reassured when other people have the same view as us. And so flocking is a safety response as opposed to a threat avoidance response. But they are all examples of indications of when somebody is experiencing threat and responding to a particular threat. And so if you're seeing that in yourself or in somebody else, it is a sign that that person is experiencing threat in the moment. Now, in this day and age, threat does not necessarily look the same. So if you think about how your brain evolved, the threat being a woolly mammoth who's charging us or a saber-toothed tiger makes a whole lot of sense. But most of us are not experiencing those at work, right? But what we are experiencing today is social threat. And we actually have the same response to social threat as we do to physical threat. In fact, social pain, being things like excluded, right? Those types of things actually register the same way in the brain as physical pain. And so in today's world, we're not so much concerned about the saber-toothed tiger as we are about our memories and our patterns that tell us we are going to experience social pain. And in a workplace, there can actually be a lot of things that could trigger that kind of response. So in our work here at E3 and at NeuroWorks, we like to use a model that was developed by Dr. David Rock, who is in charge of the Neuro Leadership Institute in the States. And he has developed a framework called the SCARF model, S-C-A-R-F, spells the word SCARF, that talks to the five major social threats domains. And that's a really useful tool if you're wanting to understand what threat would actually look like in a workplace environment, as opposed to what we might be thinking about from an evolutionary perspective. So the SCARF model, which we might talk about in a later episode, but that's a really good one to go read up on, and we'll put some information about that in the show notes that you can access. And so today we're not talking about physical threat in the same way as we might have done in the past, but we are talking about social threat. And that's why it's really important that we are building workplaces that are psychologically safe, because people will have the same level of reaction to a social threat that they would have to a physical threat. And sometimes we don't always equate it that way. It's also important to remember that what we're talking about is pattern recognition and memory. So it doesn't actually have to be a real threat, not something that you know is going to happen. It only needs to trigger the person's amygdala to say, oh, this, something like this has happened before, and it was bad then, so this could be bad now, for the person to have the same level of emotional reaction or emotional response. So it doesn't really matter if when you're talking to somebody else and they're having a reaction, if it makes sense to you or not. The point is that their brain is registering a pattern or a sense of threat from their past experiences. And we need to manage that, even if we don't really understand why that might be happening for that person. And the reason that I'm also bringing this up now is to do with that stress piece. So normally what happens to us is we have an acute threat or an acute stress. So something happens in a moment, in a defined period of time. We go through this process of recognizing there's a threat, we get ready for it, our hormones fire, our adrenaline fires, our cortisol fires, which is the chemical that helps us mobilize energy, right? So we can handle the threat in front of us. And then when the event is over, it all subsides again. All right, and we go back to normal. And that's kind of healthy. You want to be able to be ready to respond to the events that are in front of you. But when we face chronic stress and things happening all the time, what happens is our cortisol level doesn't go back down. And the problem with that is that cortisol actually affects our ability to think rationally. It affects the PFC part of our brain, that brain CEO. And so we don't necessarily have the same reasoning skills or the same response skills that we would have under other circumstances. And in those situations, what you're going to get then is a lot more reaction and a lot less rational response. And so if we are in a workplace where there's a significant amount of consistent ongoing stress, you're going to see more flare-ups from people, more fight or flight responses from people than you would in an environment where there's a lot of psychological safety and a lower level of stress, which means our skill set and our ability to handle that for ourselves and for other people becomes really important. So then the question becomes, what do you do with that? Well, I have four suggestions. There's probably more that we could talk about in more depth. And as we have different episodes with different people on the podcast, we'll dig into some of these together. But there's some four, there's kind of four initial things that I would suggest are a good place to start. The first is to think about understanding triggers. So going back to something like Dr. David Rock's scarf model, reviewing that and understanding the things that actually cause social threat response today and seeing how they show up for you and seeing how they might show up for the people around you. We find in the work that we do, when someone is having a significant emotional reaction, if you actually listen to the words that they use and the patterns in what is causing them to be unhappy, you can usually pin it back to one of those social threat domains. So you can start to understand what's causing the emotional reaction and then talk to somebody about it effectively. So that's the first thing. The second thing is around building trust. So trust is a really interesting thing, and we'll probably do a deeper dive into the world of trust at some point in the series and season, because trust is tied to oxytocin, and oxytocin is a chemical in the brain that supports social bonding. Right? What's really interesting about trust is if I trust you, if I feel connected to you, if there is that social touch point between us, and I believe that you and I have a strong relationship, then when I have a perceived threat, my actual response or reaction is lower. It's not as high as it would be under the circumstances. So if you have a very good trusting relationship with somebody, then you can have situations with them that might trigger those social threat responses, but they aren't going to respond in the same way or to the same degree. And so for leaders and team members, this is particularly important. If you can build those great trusting relationships with somebody, it means you can go through much more difficult, much more stressful territory together, not having the same level of emotional reaction or emotional response. Now, that sounds simple. Building trust is not always easy, but a good place to start is our GAIN model for gaining trust. We've gone over that in some of the previous episodes, and we'll put that in the show notes as well. But it's a way of thinking about the levers that you can pull that will help you to build trust with somebody else. If you do that, you're going to have less emotional reactions between you. The third thing that I would say is to make sure you understand how to work with somebody in the moment. All right. So you've got somebody in front of you who's having that emotional moment. They are reacting, not responding. What do you do with that? Well, regulation comes before reasoning. You can't talk somebody down from that high emotional place if that's not the part of their brain that's responding. Reasoning and rationalization are the prefrontal cortex, the PFC part of the brain. That works fine when the person is responding to you. But when somebody is reacting to you, it's the amygdala that is directing their behavior. And the amygdala doesn't respond to rationalization or reasoning. The amygdala responds to regulation. It responds to helping you deal with the behavior in the moment. So helping that person to take some deep breaths, to manage the stress that they're feeling, to come down physically, is usually a better place to start than trying to engage in some kind of debate or discussion with that person when it's not that part of their brain that's in control. And so thinking about how you help them break the cycle, get up and go for a walk, give them a tissue, label their emotions, all of those things can help that person start to regulate before you get to a place of reasoning. And then the last thing we would talk about is to do with trying to create some certainty and comfort for people. The amygdala, that sensory part of the brain, is very susceptible to unpredictability. If something feels like it's coming out of left field, if we're consistently surprised by things, if we're worried about what's coming all the time, we're consistently maintaining that threat alert, that threat readiness response, which means the amygdala is more likely to cut in and create that fight or flight response for somebody. So the more that you can do in your world to create consistency, to remove uncertainty, to create clear habits, to communicate with people, to make sure you're not leaving a void of information about something, the less likely the amygdala is going to be triggered, the more likely someone will come and constructively respond to you as opposed to reacting to you emotionally. Right. So those are the four things that we talk about all the time. Understanding triggers, understanding how to work with regulation before rationalization, building trust and removing unpredictability. Those will all help reduce the stress load that people are carrying and reduce the likelihood that that brain sentry, that amygdala, is going to cut in, so you can have more rational, sensible conversations with people instead of emotional ones. We are currently living in a very high stress world, and we're going to have people, and it could be you, who are reacting in the moment. That is now a norm. But we can make sure that we don't react to that. We can make sure that we're building an environment that helps to minimize that. And we can make sure that we as teammates and leaders have the skills to help manage those moments when they do happen, so that we build trust and not reduce it. So that's a wrap for today. Thank you very much for joining in. And if you liked our conversation today, please do like and subscribe. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. You can also check out our websites, e3.ca and neuroworks.ca, for more information about what we do in the wonderful world of work. So thanks again for joining in, and I look forward to seeing you on another episode.